The Secure in Mind project aims to raise public awareness, interest, and capacity of all things online in our rapidly developing, interconnected world. We interview top leaders in associated fields to understand what they do, why they do it, and importantly, we aim to present the human behind the policy because being human is the common denominator for us all. The project is supported by iZoon Technology Consulting, a global company specializing in cybersecurity, technological innovation for clients in defense and the private sector, and it's hosted on the Agenda Digitale website, an online news source reporting breaking news in tech and associated policy. So, welcome to the Secure in Mind podcast. Today's guest is Natalia Oropesa, and I will let her explain what she does, but it is quite phenomenal. It's a very large job, and I'm sure it keeps her busy 24/7, 24 days, 7 days a week. I'm sitting here with her and her Chief of Staff, Stefan, in Munich, where it's a beautiful sunny day, and we're about to jump straight into a nice deep dive of Siemens, cybersecurity, supply chain, and also how Natalia got to be in the position that she is, like we always do with all of our guests, to give a bit of background and insight and encouragement to people get into the industry. So, welcome.
Thank you, and a lot of questions. So I will try to address everyone one by one. So the first question was, what is it I am doing in Siemens? The official title of my responsibility is cybersecurity officer.
Okay.
I will explain you what that means in Siemens.
Okay.
So I am actually global responsible for cybersecurity. When I say global, that means that includes every single Siemens company.
Mm-hmm.
One of them will be Healthineers, the other one will be DI or SI or Gamesa or other Siemens companies. So I am responsible for cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the position is called cybersecurity is because we include into that work, let's say, everything that is related to IT security, so the security of the infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
As well as the OT security, so the technology in the production sites, as well as the product security. And in our case, it includes as well the security related to the offerings that the business units, like the ones I mentioned before, offer to the customers of Siemens.
Okay.
So we choose that word cybersecurity. You normally will find the word of CISO, which is Chief Information Security Officer.
Mm-hmm.
That normally refers to the IT security portion.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided 2 years ago to include everything and to have what we call a holistic approach,
mm-hmm.
or I call it end-to-end perspective.
Okay.
Starting with the infrastructure where you develop your products, and later on you run the infrastructure that you have in the production, developing the products as well. And at the end of the day, making sure as well the products that we deliver to our customers are secure. And of course, whatever we offer in regard to cybersecurity to the different customers. So we have this holistic approach.
Mm.
I would say not everyone does it like this. You'll still find the IT security in the IT, the OT security in the production organizations of the different companies, the product security in the research and development organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So there are still organizations.
So it's quite particular depending on sector.
Exactly. So it is split. Historical reasons for that. And what we discover is, if you have this end-to-end perspective, then you will have a hole in the middle that the hackers will use to make an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, you are faster in the production of cybersecurity or in the production of security solutions,
mm-hmm.
because you can reuse across the different product and OT and IoT the same kind of measures. So to name one, or to give you one example, I mean, you always need to patch all over the place.
Mm.
So if this is an iPhone, or if this is a controller or a robot in the production, or a product, Like, I don't know, whatever product of Siemens is around, you need to make sure that you have the current version of software that provides you with the right security, not only with the right functionality, right?
And that's a big question, patch management, because that is a tough thing to do in even a small organization. Tell me, how do you manage that?
It is, I mean, I think from the historic perspective, the IT discovered long time ago that dispatching was needed.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the IT or the infrastructure environments, it was manageable, especially after the idle, processes that are supporting the service provision of IT services. There were processes set up to have a maintenance window where you do the patches that you need to do, mm-hmm. either because you need more functionality on your software or because you need to secure the infrastructure.
Mm.
So there is already in the IT a specific maintenance window that you use to apply those patches. Normally, after installing a patch, and this is something that you experience in your iPhone, regularly you have to reset your equipment,
mm-hmm.
and this causes the systems not to be available.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this availability is exactly the difficult part when you move to the IoT, because you cannot afford to lose the availability of the systems, because
mm-hmm.
you are producing something,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot interrupt that production. So that becomes to be very, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So,
and how does it work?
Well, what you normally do is, first of all, you have to convince your users and your customers that this is needed, number
mm-hmm.
one. Number two is, you want to organize those patches so that they don't have to be executed every hour or every week or
yeah.
every month, but you can do that twice a year, sorry. So that you can reduce the unavailability of the system.
Which in itself is complicated, because if it's once every 6 months and then vulnerabilities being discovered in, you know, every day, every second, then okay.
Mm. And normally you have to be transparent to your customers and to your users and tell them whenever you have an emergency patch.
Mm.
Okay. So we have what we call the advisory week. So every second week we communicate to the customers about the different vulnerabilities that the products could have.
Mm-hmm.
And we also communicate as well the urgency or the criticality of those vulnerabilities,
mm-hmm.
so that they can decide whether they want to interrupt or not.
Okay.
And of course, very important is, in Siemens, we also research on how to do this patch process less intrusive for
mm-hmm.
a production. So we are trying to do this without having any interruption at all.
Okay.
From the different infrastructures that we manage. So we research, we have a big team
mm-hmm.
doing only that, researching how can we improve
efficient patch management without intrusion
yeah.
on production.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's skip back a bit. So that
yeah.
gives a good description as to what your day-to-day
mm-hmm.
duties are, and we can expand on that in a bit. How did you get here?
Well, let me tell you, for cybersecurity is a new topic, so
yeah.
there was not there before. So when I study, I am electronic engineer, then I did a master's in finance, and then I did several certifications in ITIL and exponential technology in the Singularity University, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And I am a tech person.
Mm.
I am in love with technology, and
you're a nerd.
Yes, I am. And I was all over the place in the world. In Mexico started, because I am Mexican, and then to Germany, and then back to the US, and then a little bit to Brazil, and then back to Bayern, which is south
mm.
part of Germany, and the north part of Germany, in Niedersachsen. So And then I was always into the operation. So I had different positions, like VP for operations in Mexico and other positions related to operations.
And sorry, was this just in Siemens or is this in different companies?
No, this was in different companies. Okay. So I was part of Volkswagen and part of the Volkswagen group. So for a while, Volkswagen had GEDAS as the internal company taking care of their IT. So I was part of GEDAS. And then this GEDAS organization was sold to Deutsche Telekom. And then I became part of T-Systems. So I was always moving from Volkswagen to GEDAS and from GEDAS to T-Systems and then going back to Volkswagen. So I spent in total 20-something years inside of the Volkswagen group.
Okay. And they had production facilities in Mexico? Is that how it got started?
Well, they have production facilities all over the world, including China and India and Mexico as well and Brazil. And then, as I say, I was always operations. And then one day, Volkswagen needed to do a security program. This is public information, so you might find in the press in the past. The situation that they needed to have to do a security program across the Volkswagen group, which includes brands like Seat, like others, but as well companies like Volkswagen in Mexico, Volkswagen in Brazil, to increase the quality of the IT security across the group. So I got the proposal to lead that program. And the reason for me doing this was the number one thing is I was all over the place. And I knew a lot of IT colleagues at that time, number one. Second, and I think that's very interesting, is of course when you do IT operations, you also take care of security, right? Now, you look at security always from an operative point of view, and if you want, from a pragmatic point of view, and not from this governance perspective. So if you want to be successful in executing and installing the different measures needed to assure IT security, then you have to understand, how am I going to do that? So that is operative possible to do that, right? And it's not about issuing policies. It's about making sure they are installed properly. And this is what the program...
And by design.
And by design. So this is what the program was about. It was a 3-year program. I was really happy doing this because I had the opportunity to work with a lot of very intelligent persons, and I had the opportunity to look at the Volkswagen group from another perspective, from the security, cybersecurity perspective. So I learned a lot.
And sorry, out of interest, how many years ago was this? Because I guess
was 10 years ago.
10 years ago, okay.
So I, and then...
Was it a new initiative?
It was new. I took it from zero, from scratch. And at the end of the day, I have to say that the program was very successful. So it was also in the press. And I was really happy with this topic because it's not only a pure technological topic, but it has to do, first of all, with risk management. Second, it has to do with dealing with a lot of experts from different perspectives. And you learn a lot from them, so it's fascinating for me. And at that time, I was already in love with cybersecurity. So I was already committed to protect. I am a technical person, so I was fascinated with the topic. I didn't see that topic from this perspective before because I was operations, IT operations. Security was like, oh, we have to follow the security rules. But then it was, the perspective was different. And as I said, I was convinced that this was the right topic to work on. So I continued doing this. I was first the program manager for this program. It was a huge program. And then after that, I became to be the CISO of the Volkswagen Group. So I was the chief information security officer of the whole Volkswagen Group, okay. which included the different brands, which was fascinating. So it was really very interesting.
Now, just a question, as CISO for the group, did that include physical security crash testing, durability of the car frames?
No. That's a good question, because I was really the CISO, so
okay.
Chief Information Security okay. Office.
So right? That was a separate remit.
Okay. That was just, not just, but that was a specific this task, so I was responsible for that.
Yep.
And we started back then a very good cooperation with the product security. Nevertheless, I got another program, so that then I was in charge of a program to put together the different IT services across the group, again, dealing with the brands.
Into one shared service.
Okay. More or less. And so I started that. And then after that I started, I got aware of the position I have in Siemens. And of course, it was very attractive for me to hear that the challenge was about dealing with the whole spectrum of cybersecurity. Mm. So not only the IT security, but as well the product security, and as well the OT security. Mm. So that was like my dream come true.
Mm.
And then when I hear about that, specifically from Dr. Bush, Roland Bush at that time, so that was it. I was ready to do that. Mm. And now I have been doing this since, for 2 years now. So this is a story.
Today.
This is a story of my life in 5 minutes,
well,
I guess.
Fascinating stuff. And it's, congratulations on, what you've achieved.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's focus on Siemens. In your opinion, I'll just get a thought of the most pressing issue that you have to face these days. I know there are many, but what would you choose as the most pressing?
Well, as always, I will organize this by saying that you know about cybersecurity, so you know how complex it is to understand the attack scenario that we are having. Mm. So everything is influencing that attack scenario. So politics, there is always something. I mean, you cannot talk about one single issue because there is always something popping up.
Mm.
And this is, of course, motivating the hackers to do the one or the other, number one. No. Number two is technology is available for everyone.
Mm.
So when I cook at home, I rather look at YouTube and they tell me very good how to prepare everything.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if this is a French plate or a good Mexican recipe. I just look into YouTube and
watch and learn.
And I learn and I know what to do exactly. Right? Mm. And the same thing happens for hacking.
Mm.
So if you take the time, and sometimes that time is about 5 minutes, you will find how to hack almost everything.
Mm.
So this is very complex. Now, the other thing that is happening is that regulations are not only increasing, but they are becoming a reality faster than what we saw before. So to give you an example, the Chinese cybersecurity law or the Cloud Act in the US and in California. So,
can you expand on both of those?
Yeah. Well, they are actually regulating the cybersecurity in the countries.
Mm-hmm.
They have different purposes. The first one is protecting the products that are being used in the country, and the other ones are making sure that in case it is needed, the governments have access to whatever data is needed so that they can prevent terrorism and other stuff, right? So that you have an idea, in total, more than 70 laws are impacting us, not only from the product perspective, but from the infrastructure perspective. Mm. So we have to check all the time whether we are compliant, yes or not.
Mm.
Right.
And it's quite complex that we live in a global world with different legislations and regulations to follow.
It's very complex. I mean, Europe is as well complex. I mean, you have different regulations or requirements in France than what you have in Germany and then what you might have in Italy, right? Mm. And what we have on the European perspective. Mm. So it's very complex. So that's another situation that adds complexity to the whole cybersecurity topic. Mm. And last but not least, the other complexities as well that digitalization is happening, right? Mm. And we all want that to happen. I told you before, I am a tech person. I'm in love with technology and I do want to use the digital solutions. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. Now, you have to consider that digitalization has, for me, two interesting aspects. So the one aspect is that digitalization is about software.
Mm.
Right. And software has a ever-changing nature. I mean, it's always changing. The functionality is always increasing. And that functionality is sometimes misused by the hackers to do something, right? So what we call vulnerabilities is not other thing but the misuse of that functionality. So you have forever vulnerabilities in the software. And the other aspect of digitalization is that it increases connectivity. So if you add both in the equation, it's a very complex situation that you need to manage, right? I mean, you have vulnerabilities that are connected all over the place. Mm. So if you think about OT, so the production environments, that until now, they haven't been connected.
Mm.
Not really, not to the internet. They were mostly isolated boxes.
Mm.
Connected, yes, to a production network.
Mm.
But now with digitalization, this is completely changing and worse. You see now a robot cooperating with a human being in producing something. So that is a major concern for all of us. I mean, I talk with my other colleagues in the other companies in the industry, and we are all concerned about that, right? So this is the complexity. I talk about the attack scenario, the attack landscape, what we call, and then the attack surface, which is increasing. So it used to be very much the IT infrastructure. Mm. Therefore, you mainly find in the companies chief information security officer because it was a major concern for cybersecurity.
Mm.
Now this attack surface is growing. It's growing to the OT.
Mm.
As I mentioned before, robots are connected, controllers are getting connected. And then it's also growing because now you also have products that are into critical infrastructure, that are being connected. And last but not least, you have a lot of suppliers that are contributing in whatever. Either they are suppliers to your infrastructure, right? Or they are in the supply chain of your different products. So this is like the attack surface. Mm. And as I mentioned before, it's growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
So these are the elements that are included into this topic.
And there are two areas there. Supply chain is a big one that I want to focus on. Skipping back, Siemens and other manufacturers of scale, not so much the influence, but the participation in setting regulation with the relative legislative bodies. How important is that? Because you help shape some of these policies
Absolutely.
As well, because you understand what your environment
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. So we have a offices, government affairs, they are in contact with us, and we contribute with whatever is relevant for us. We get as well information about what is the progress of the different regulations being issued. And we are represented at Siemens in the different bodies.
And do you feel that that's improving? Some ways,
yeah. Yeah, it's slow. Yeah. I mean, I wish I could have more influence and speed up some decisions.
Yeah.
The issuing of regulation has a process. You cannot always change that. Now, very important for me to say is, you know, we have the Charter of Trust, and one of the principles is exactly the one trying to influence this kind of bodies regulations. So we have a sub or a task force called advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that this group of people is trying to do is to increase the priority of this cybersecurity in the governments, in the different government bodies.
Mm.
This is the number one thing to do.
Mm.
And the number two is to contribute in the regulations that the different governments are issuing. Yes, we do, and we do that globally. So we have representatives all over the place.
It's a former guest was Despina Spanel, who's the EU cybersecurity director, and she was from memory, it was either her or another guest, but one of the discussions was how fast technology moves and regulation moves slower, and forming policy, and that doesn't look like it can change anytime soon, because that model, how can you change that? So that's, it's complicated.
It's very complicated. And another complication is that I guess those regulations normally have the priorities so that they first want to gain transparency about what's happening, right? So you need to issue a lot of reporting. And my point is always that this kind of regulations, increasing the reporting that companies are doing back to the government entities, they are not going to secure or to protect us companies and us society more. This is just going to increase the number of tasks that you have to do, and it's to create overload in the company. So we need to be very careful about what the regulations are doing. And I am all for standardizations, for instance, in the product, because it cannot be that you as a customer that you have in your production environment, one controller that has this level of security, medium security, let's say, and the other one that has a high security, or that the other that has no security. So you have to make sure that we all comply with some level of security that protects you, because of course you depend on everything together to secure your environment, right?
And that could be a good way to segue into supply chain, because when you have manufacturers in maybe countries which have more lax legislative standards, or even if they have the legislative standards written in ink but not enforced, then that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. And then you asked me, and going back to your initial question, if we influence, yes or not, and the answer to that is we want to influence, and therefore this is included in our Charter of Trust, because we do believe that by cooperating among companies, so we have 16 partners in Charter of Trust, so if we express our opinion together, then we have more chances to be really influencing whatever.
Right? And these partners are similar types of organizations?
Yes, you were talking about similar organizations. So we have as partners IBM, we have Cisco.
Yeah.
So they are important companies that are coming together to make sure that we have cybersecurity in the digital space, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that we are doing, because we are touching so much about supply chain, this is in fact one of the most important topics. So we have come together, and this was the priority, the first one that we took last year. And what we did was to agree among us to have the same basic requirements, basis requirements for our suppliers, because it was the case, it is still the case, that every one of us will have different requirements, sometimes for the same supplier. So this doesn't make things easier for the suppliers, right? And then what we did was to agree on those, to place them in our contracts. And what we are trying to do now is to do one control only. So meaning, if I verify that supplier A or supplier Blue is already compliant with the cybersecurity requirements, then the other partner doesn't have to prove that again. And that, of course, speed up the cybersecurity among the supply chain. So I very much trust that this will give us all more security in the digital world. Very motivated to push for that to happen.
Absolutely. I wanted to switch to a question about the types of threat actors that you're faced with. And you spoke about the ubiquity of potentiality for vulnerability utilization. So I guess an example off the top of my head was a nation state developing tools which then get leaked, and those tools are used by criminal groups or nation state actors in the form of, let's say, for example, a big one in the news, I don't think it affected Siemens, but Eternal Blue and then WannaCry, and that is a result of digital tools being leaked and then utilized, and now it's still being utilized. In a similar vein, the considerations when you're talking about different threat actors and the level of threat that each pose, how do you manage that? And let me put that into context with Siemens in a historical note, which is a quite a famous one, Stuxnet. So.
Yeah. Well, we learn a lot from that. I mean, at that time, the affected product was not connected to the network. So you have to learn about that. And I think we were kind of lucky in the unlucky event that happened, because we learn a lot from that. So what we learn is we have to be prepared for everything to happen. So we put a lot of effort not only in preventing things to happen, but to know what is it that we are going to do in case something hit us. Because you cannot say that you are safe. So we have a good setup of crisis management. So we are always alert about what's happened. We insist in disaster recovery, which is not a new topic. So the IT and the ITIL, library, those processes, they include disaster recovery. So those are not new. Business continuity is not new, right? So we insist a lot of on that. So we issue the right policies for that to happen, and we make some controls on that. This is important, and this is what we learn. And we are evaluating always the risk, and the evaluation of the risk always contains what we call threat analysis. So we have a good team of people that is all the time looking about what's going on with politics, what kind of malware is around, is being issued because some government not talking with the other, and of course they will not want to start a war immediately, but they started for sure a cyber war by issuing malware in order to damage something, right?
Or position or signal or
So so we have a good team of people that is weekly issuing a report of what is it that we see. Either this is new malware or new vulnerabilities arising. There was last year in April a communication about a new patch for Windows 7. And of course we all knew Windows 7 was a end of life, and Microsoft was publishing a patch. So you can imagine the
systems administrators around the world.
So, of course, that that report always triggers an action at our side. Mm. So we always evaluate the criticality.
Mm.
The criticality depends always on the attack surface.
Mm.
So the criticality will not be the same for Siemens or for Volkswagen or for Allianz mm. being a financial company, mm. right?
Mm.
So you always have to evaluate what is your attack
your
surface.
Your own attack surface and your own risk.
And how yeah. this risk applies to you.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have good processes
mm.
to start a reaction immediately, whether this is patching, shutting down communications, setting up, I don't know, load balancers
mm.
to deal with a DDoS attack, for instance.
Mm.
So we trigger that. We always evaluate that, whether this is relevant for the board, relevant mm. for the business. Communication is very important, so mm. everyone knows this is about technology, and this is not only about technology, it's as well about the proper communication to mm. the right person in the right moment.
Mm. Right. And also external communication. That's been an interesting thing. The shift in companies keeping the fact that there was a breach, for example, now they see that not only there's legislation in different countries which is dictating that they have to disclose, but the benefit of saying, we got breached. And by the way, even though you're competitors, none of us want to be breached. So therefore, we need to disclose the details and so you can prepare yourself.
Exactly. So tell you an interesting story from my past.
Mm.
Of course, when I was CISO back then in Volkswagen, we wanted to cooperate with others. And when I first came to these meetings where others were sitting there, and I cannot disclose the names mm. at this time, but there were other CISOs from other important companies. Mm. And I do remember we all saying, nothing's happening with us.
Mm.
We have everything under
control. We're fine.
Yeah, you know, we have everything under control.
Mm.
Now, a year later,
mm.
someone starts saying, you know what, it might be the case that we have that vulnerability that was raising
but
that.
I didn't say anything.
I didn't say. And rather soon, we all discover,
mm.
come on.
Mm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We all have attacks.
Mm.
We have not been very successful protecting mm. our infrastructure. In some cases, we have incidents. We could be learning from each other because mm. the same attacker that attacked you last week is going to attack me next mm. week.
Let's be real and actually tackle the problem.
Even yeah. without the legislations and without us having the duty to report on those,
mm.
It was clear that we could only win from transparency,
mm.
right? And thank God, I think transparency has been increasing among the companies.
Mm.
Of course, we still need to do a lot of things on that regard.
Mm.
I don't think that everything gets reported.
Mm.
And that's not always very helpful because if you are in my position,
mm.
I am always asked, for instance, how much is the right spending for cybersecurity? And
mm.
if you have to go back and look at how many incidents, how many damages, what are the cost of the damages,
mm.
if you don't have a compiled information, then you are not going to be very accurate in the
yeah.
planning,
yeah.
right? So this is one example. So transparency still has to increase.
Mm.
We have increased already a lot, but I think we still need to work on that.
Mm.
Yeah.
How do you see Europe in the context, in the global context, in terms of maturity, development, legislation, etc.?
From the legislation perspective, unfortunately, my perspective is that segmented.
Mm.
As I mentioned before, you have different requirements in France than what you have in Germany or what you have in Italy and
mm.
Probably Spain. They are others less active in issuing legislation. So a company like us, we have to check and be compliant with almost with everything because we have products that are present in everywhere.
Mm.
And my point is always, I do whatever.
Mm.
if that increases the protection, right? But those requirements are not always, or the different flavors of regulations is not always increasing the protection, right? Of the companies. So we lose a lot of time by, yeah, but you know what, in the case of that country, that has to be right. Yeah? And here has to be whatever.
Here's X, here's Y.
This is what I call the different flavors of the same thing, and consumes time, effort, especially time. And in the cybersecurity, to be fast is very important because, you know, the hackers are very fast. I mean, they don't have regulations to follow. They have resources, whether they are human resources or financial resources. They have the technology. They use the technology. I mean, they are very fast. So whatever makes us slower is not good.
It's a major inhibitor, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a global shortage of cybersecurity professionals.
Yes.
Which is pronounced. They're very pronounced everywhere. What do you, as the boss in Siemens of cybersecurity, look for in people? I know that's a very broad question because there are a lot of positions underneath your remit. But I'll focus on one of them, which I find quite interesting, and a lot of listeners would find quite interesting. You mentioned a team which assesses and analyzes different threats.
Mm-hmm.
Now that combines an understanding of technology, an understanding of geopolitical movements,
correct,
an understanding of so many different factors, which I guess traditionally you wouldn't think just IT.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, that's the point. So first of all is, what do we do in regards of talents? We have a good location strategy. So we have analyzed 26 countries around the world, and we have checked not only whether the education institutes like the universities can provide us with the professionals for cybersecurity, but as well we assess whether politically is the right place to have and to grow such capacities, or from the cybercrime perspective, or. So we have a good location strategy, and I cannot disclose the names of those countries, but we know exactly where we hire people and for what.
Okay.
That increases the chances that we get the talents that we need. Number one. Number two, you always have what I call to make your focus on what you are looking for broader than just a cybersecurity expert. So for instance, if you are issuing regulations or policies in your company, you always think you need a super expert of cybersecurity. And for sure you need expertise, but the person who issued the policies, it has to be mainly a communication person. Yeah, because you need your audience and your company to understand what is it that you need to do. So the main requisite is a communication. So someone, a journalist, can help you with that. Or a journalist, because his job is to communicate. And then he or she can sit down with the expert and then issue what you need. So you have to be very, to include everything, what you really need, and not only think about experts, which you need. I mean, you need good experts in cloud security. You need good security architects. You need,
communication
is key, right? People that understand politics and the whole conflicts that we always have in the war. You have to be open about what is it that you need.
And communication would run in your role as well, where you're communicating to board and you're communicating for budget and you're communicating for various actions on you know, more urgent or less urgent. Yeah.
I learned that the hard way. So I am an engineer and electronic engineer, as I mentioned, and I started my career configuring things in the network. So I was a very good expert in networks, I think. I like to think that I was a very good expert, and I love to sit down in my desk and configure something. Mm. And one day I was configuring a Cisco 7000, which was the core router at that time in some part of the world. And then I download the best software for that Cisco 7000, and I was amazed about the new functionality and what you could do with that. And of course, I needed to reset the Cisco, which was, again, the core router for the infrastructure of that location. I just reset the router without because it was the best thing for me to do. And it took me a month to explain everyone why I did that and to avoid being fired from that company. And then that's why I say I learned the hard way that the communications have a very high priority and that you need to communicate, right?
But certainly now, after, I guess, you know, the last 5 years, 10 years, that communication's made much easier because there's awareness now.
Yeah. And you know what? Something that I am thinking all the time is I am certainly not the expert in communications. I have to accept that, and I have to accept help as well. So I have always close to me someone that is coaching me on how to communicate the best. And I think with the time I am getting better, I might never be the expert. Probably you can tell that after we are finished with this conversation.
No, you're an expert podcaster already.
I will never be the expert, I know, but I take it serious, and I know how important it is, and I always mention that to the experts. It's not only about knowing everything, that's important. But if you're not able to communicate, it will never be important.
What's
for the
point?
Other.
Yeah.
So it's important. It's very important.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. We're about 45 minutes, which is typically when we cut it off for the nice commute, wherever the commute may be around the world. Do you have anything else to add in closing? Or?
Well, I know that probably this podcast is going to a lot of young people, young women as well. And then let me tell you, in my experience being a woman working in this field, I think the women's always choose other topics like education or marketing, because we as women, we want to be closer to society because we have this kind of mother thing inside of us. And we want to be close, and we want to benefit the society directly. And we never think that technology is close to society. And, and this topic is very close to society. See, if we
it can enable that security.
Exactly. So guess what? I mean, if we don't secure this digital world, then our families, our kids, they are on risk because they are going to be the users of a self-driving car, and they are already the users of the social media, and they are going to be interacting maybe with a robot in the future. So these topics, cybersecurity, is touching the society and is benefiting at the end of the day the society. So therefore I want to use this opportunity to encourage everyone, especially the women out there, because we need this different perspective. We need diversity. This is what diversity is about, having different perspective on the same topic. We don't have many. I am myself sometimes very alone. I am the only one in the boards and so on and so forth. So I would love to encourage all of them and to offer my help in case someone needs to talk with someone and have a chat about the benefits of this. I am always reachable over the Siemens page.
I'm sure many, many people will appreciate that, many women and girls. Does Siemens have any programs that's for coding for girls?
Several. Yep. I am co-founder of Women for Cyber in the World Economic Forum. So I do a lot of talkings, because this is what you can talk about it, convince people. So This is what we do as well in Siemens. We have several products.
Wonderful work. Well, people can find Siemens. It's very easy to find and it's very famous. And I'm sure you won't have a problem using Google to find it or whichever other search engine you have. So I really, really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
The Secure in Mind project aims to raise public awareness, interest, and capacity of all things online in our rapidly developing interconnected world. We interview top leaders in associated fields to understand what they do, why they do it, and importantly, we aim to present the human behind the policy because being human is the common denominator for us all. The project is supported by iZoom Technology Consulting, a global company specializing in cybersecurity, technological innovation for clients in defense and the private sector, and it's hosted on the Agenda Digitale website, an online news source reporting breaking news in tech and associated policy.